Chapter 49.
The breakfast is ready, Nkosi.
Michael Courtney looked up from his book at the servant. Thank you, Joseph. I'm coming now. These 2 hours of study each morning passed so quickly. He checked the clock on the shelf above his bed. 6:30 already. Closed the book and stood up. While he brushed his hair, he watched his reflection in the mirror without attention. His mind was fully occupied with events that would fill this new day. There was work to do. His reflection looked back at him with serious grey eyes, from a face whose lean contours were marred by the big Courtney nose. His hair was black and springy beneath the brush. He dropped the brush, and while he shrugged into his leather jacket, he flipped open the book to check a passage. He read it through carefully and then turned and went out into the corridor. Anna and Garrick Courtney were seated at opposite ends of the long dining table of Tunis-Kral, and they both looked up expectantly as he entered. "Good morning, Mother," she held up her face for his kiss. "Good morning, Pa." "Hello, my boy." Garry was wearing full dress, complete with crowns and decorations, and Michael felt a flare of irritation. It was so damned ostentatious. It also reminded him that he was 19 years old and there was a war going on while he sat at home on the farm. "Are you going into town today, Pa?" "No, I'm going to do some work on my memoirs." "Oh." Michael glanced pointedly at the uniform, and his father flushed slightly and applied himself to his meal. "How are your studies, darling?" Anna broke the silence. "Well enough, thank you, Mother."
"I'm certain you will have as little trouble with the final examinations as you had with the others."
Anna smiled at him possessively and stretched out to touch his hand. Michael withdrew it quickly and laid down his fork.
"Mother, I want to talk to you about enlisting."
Anna's smile froze. At the end of the table, Garry straightened in his chair.
"No," he snapped with unusual violence. "We've been over this before. You're still a minor, and you'll do as you're told."
"The war is almost over, darling. Please think of your father and me."
It began then. Another of those long, wheedling, pleading arguments that sickened and frustrated Michael until he stood up abruptly and left the room. His horse was waiting, saddled for him, in the yard. He threw himself onto its back and swung its head at the gate, lifting it over and scattering chickens as he landed. He galloped furiously away towards the main dip tank. From the dining room, they heard the hooves beat away until they had dwindled into silence. Garry stood up.
"Where are you going?" snapped Anna.
"To my study."
"To the brandy bottle in your study," she corrected him contemptuously.
"Don't, Anna."
"Don't, Anna," she mimicked him. "Please don't, Anna. Is that all you can say?"
Her voice had lost the genteel inflection she had cultivated so carefully. Now it contained all the accumulated bitterness of 20 years.
"Please, Anna, I'll stop him going, I promise you."
"You'll stop him," she laughed. "How will you stop him? Will you rattle your medals at him? How will you stop him? You, who have never done one useful thing in all your life."
She laughed again shrilly.
"Ha ha! Why don't you show him your leg and say, 'Please don't leave your poor crippled daddy.'"
Garry drew himself up. His face had gone very pale.
"He'll listen to me. He's my son."
"Your son."
"Anna, please."
"Your son.
Oh, that's choice. He's not your son. He's Sean's son."
"Anna."
He tried to stop her.
"How could you have a son?"
She was laughing again, and he could not stand it. He started for the door, but her voice followed him, cutting into the two most sensitive places in his soul. His deformity and his impotence. He stumbled into his study, slammed the door and locked it. Then he crossed quickly to the solid cabinet that stood beside his desk. He poured the tumbler half full and drank it. Then he sank into his chair and closed his eyes and reached for the bottle behind him. He poured again carefully and screwed the cap back onto the bottle. This one he would sip slowly, making it last perhaps an hour. He had learned how to keep the glow. He unbuttoned and removed his tunic, stood up and hung it over the back of the chair, seated himself once more, sipped at the tumbler, then drew towards him the pile of handwritten sheets and read the one on top. "Colenso. An Account of the Campaign in Natal Under General Buller by Colonel Garrick Courtney, VC, DSO. He lifted it, laid it aside, and began to read what followed. Having read it so many times before, he had come to believe in it. It was good. He knew it was good. So, too, did Messrs. William Heinemann in London, to whom he had sent a draft of the first two chapters. They were anxious to publish as soon as possible. He worked on quietly and happily all morning. At midday, old Joseph brought a meal to the study. Cold chicken and salads on Delftware china, with a bottle of White Cape wine wrapped in a snowy napkin. He worked as he ate. That evening, when he had altered the last paragraph on the final page and laid his pen on the inkstand, he was smiling. "Now I will go and see my darling," he spoke aloud and put on his tunic. The homestead of Turneskral sat on the crest of a rise below the escarpment, a big building of whitewashed walls, thatch and Dutch gables. In front of it, the terraced lawns sprawled away, contoured by beds of azaleas and blue rhododendrons, and bounded on the one side by the horse paddocks. Two large paddocks for the brood mares and the yearlings, where Gary paused beside the low fence and watched the foals nuzzling upwards at the udders. Then he limped along the fence towards the smaller enclosure, with its 9-foot fence of thick canvas-padded gum poles that contained his stud stallion. Gypsy was waiting for him, nodding his almost snake-like head so that his mane flared golden in the late sunlight, flattening his ears, then pricking them forward, dancing a little with impatience. "Hey, boy. Hey there, Gypsy," Gary called, and the stallion thrust his head between the poles to nibble with soft lips at Gary's sleeve. "Sugar, is that what you're after?" Gary chuckled and cupped his hands while the stallion fed delicately from them. "Sugar, my darling," Gary whispered in sensual delight at the touch of the soft muzzle on his skin, and Gypsy cocked his ears to listen to his voice. "That's all. All finished." The stallion nuzzled his chest, and Gary wiped his hands on its neck, caressing the warm and silky coat. "That's all, my darling. Now run for me. Let me watch you run." He stepped back and clapped his hands loudly. "Run, my darling, run." The stallion pulled his head back between the poles and went up on his hind legs, whinnying as he reared, cutting at the air with his forehooves. The veins stood out along the belly and upon the tight, double-swollen bag of his scrotum. Swift and virile and powerful, it pivoted upon its quarters. "Run for me," shouted Garrick. The stallion came down into full gallop along the track worn by its hooves, sweeping around the paddock with loose dirt flying and the light dancing on his coat as the great muscles bulged beneath. "Run!" Leaning against the poles of the fence, Garrick watched him with an expression of terrible yearning. When he stopped again, with the first dark patches of sweat dulling his shoulders, Garrick straightened up and shouted across the stable yard, "Zama, bring her now!" On a long rein, two grooms led the brood mare down towards the paddock. Gypsy's nostrils flared into dark pink caverns, and he rolled his eyes until the whites showed. "Wait, my darling," whispered Garrick, in a voice tight with his own excitement.